Well, it's another day, another breaking news story, Barry. They'd rather talk about anything else than what's really going on. And it's not because they don't know what's happening. The media pundits and talking heads just don't want you paying attention. The real stories, you have to look beyond the headlines for those. We do that at CDM. You know the truth is being covered up. Prepare for what will come with My Patriot Supply. Since 2008, My Patriot Supply has helped millions of Americans get ready for the worst. Today, their best-selling three-month emergency food kits are flying off the shelves. I've seen it. Get yours right now at my website, preparewithcdm.com. This food kit offers over 2,000 calories every day, plus ultra-durable four-layer packaging. It lasts up to 25 years in storage. Order all the kits you need right now for $200 off each, free shipping included. You've been warned about what can happen. Don't live in fear. Take back of your future, because this isn't just food, it's freedom. Stock up on these food kits at preparewithcdm.com, preparewithcdm.com. Contagion kit is something new. Can you tell us about that and what's in it and what it's for?
Well, the contagion kit is specifically geared towards a respiratory virus. It mm-hmm. includes some of the medications that we've been talking about that are well known to be able to treat respiratory viruses. And mm-hmm. importantly, it includes a nebulizer, a mm-hmm. way to aerosolize a liquid medication so that you can breathe it into the lungs. Mm-hmm. Again, these kits are not meant to replace your doctor or a relationship with a doctor. They are not meant for you to fly solo. We have telemedicine visits mm-hmm. available if you have any questions about the symptoms you're having. There is a booklet in there as well that supports and kind of coaches you through what symptoms you may be having from something. So these aren't meant to be a panacea to replace mm-hmm. everything in medicine. It's a way, however, for people to feel and to be prepared, to be at the ready, to be more resilient, and to be more immune from the sorts of intrusions that we saw during COVID, where your insurance company or your own doctor or the pharmacist or the pharmacy was refusing to let people get a hold of medication.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and today we're doing a special show here on the Globalist in Plain Sight with our senior editorial reporters. And Todd, let's start with you as a founder. This past week is historical precedent in terms of the conviction of Donald Trump. We haven't seen this. We've never had a former president indicted or convicted. And let's just talk about this, because I think this is important for people to understand. This is a real globalist fight that's invaded the United States and taken out a president so far. I mean, just with this conviction.
Well, thanks, Christine. Thanks for having me on. I think that it's very obvious now that they will do anything to stay in power. This is quite clear. And that's the take home that Americans need to understand. So if you're out there wondering, well, wait, maybe we can, essentially fix this in the judicial system or whatever, remains to be seen. I think you need to be awake and you need to be involved. And I think the takeaway is they are playing for keeps, and we need to play for keeps to keep our country. That's my take on this whole situation. That no more, Mr. Nice Guy, and I don't mean violence, but I mean in the street, peacefully protesting, standing up to this tyranny, because the option, people say I might lose my job, I might not get invited to the country club, I might lose clients. Well, guess what? You're going to lose all that anyway. So it's time to stand up.
All right, Bill, you're in Georgia. That's a pivotal state. It was in 2020. It is going to be in 2024. Have you seen any movement reaction down there to the people in Georgia?
Oh, of course. As a matter of fact, many folks in Georgia have recognized over the past months that for reasons we can't really understand, there's something of an epicenter kind of feeling here in Georgia. Everything keeps coming back to Georgia, even some of the health-related stuff that's popped up, but especially when it comes to election integrity, the wish for us to clean that up and get Trump back in office. Within a couple hours of the verdict coming out, folks here in Georgia had, without really pausing for a real organization, they get out, and as you said, Todd, they were out in the streets, they were waving flags, they're waving at cars, they're making sure that people are visible and visibly objecting to what they saw happen in New York this week. So we'll be showing more of that in the coming days, but didn't wait on anything. They went right out, called their friends, and got out there to say, we're not having it.
And by the time that Donald Trump held his press conference the day after, he talked about how that they had raised about $39 million. This morning, the latest numbers I saw was $53 million. In terms of support for his campaign. Kurt, you spent a lot of time in Europe. And so what's your feelings about what's going on in Europe? Because the headlines in the last 24 hours, I thought was pretty absurd. And it's, again, it's putting sort of the fear into the voters. Don't vote for Trump because he can't go to the UK or Canada, which is just absolutely crazy because they may have policies for people who are convicted. But I mean, this is a nonviolent crime, for God's sakes.
No,
if it isn't even a crime, I'm just saying by its conviction alone.
Right. And it would be absurd to think that a foreign country would not let the president of the United States come to their country because of some, you know, bureaucratic rule, which is basically what these people are referring to. It, you know, certain countries have. But it'd be very hard to enforce something like that. But overall, you were seeing the reaction in Europe where people are really appalled at what they're seeing happen in the United States, which, you know, is supposed to be a beacon of democracy and freedom and, you know, a responsible justice system. And really, with this sort of decision and this activity going on around lawfare in general, we're really discrediting ourselves on the world stage, you know, and losing any moral authority we had to, you know, tell other countries how they should behave and how their democracy should function when ours is clearly not functioning in the way it should. And you're seeing a lot of outpouring of support for Trump in different circles in Europe. We're seeing it in, you know, in massive protests in the UK right now, which are also tied to the immigration policies that the EU is trying to impose. And the British government, of course, has taken in, you know, massive amounts of illegal immigrants into the country. And there's just a great uproar over that. You're seeing a lot of political figures come out in support of Trump. Most notably, of course, Viktor Orban in Hungary was the first. But several others, including the vice premier of Italy, also came out in support of Trump and you know, basically called it out that this is political persecution. So now some politicians in Europe, of course, will walk a tight line because if they're in a position of leadership, they don't want to, you know, necessarily alienate the United States. So they'll stay silent on the matter publicly, but privately, I think it's pretty clear that people are just shocked that the United States has come to this.
You know, I thought it was kind of interesting during Trump's press conference when, yes, he spouted off and he talked about the trial and the conviction. But he also brought it back to the issues and what's at stake in America in terms of the border, the economy, inflation. I mean, he has a tendency to, and it's a gift. He can bring the issues to the kitchen table. Do you guys think that he has now highlighted the importance of these issues, like the out of control immigration, the crime that's going up? Todd, what are your feelings about, you know, keeping it focused on the issues as well? Your volume's off.
Sorry, on the fly here, on the road as usual. I think the issues are front and center to everybody. I think the illegal immigration, the economy are the big ones. I see it everywhere. You know, you see masses of illegals, you see fear of a possible army. This is what I'm hearing that is spreading around the world, that people in Europe are concerned about the illegals, in the UK specifically, that they are creating an army of whatever, that they can enforce their will on the subjects in Europe and here. And so that is something that is clearly seen to everybody, and people are scared. So, you know, the message is either you stand up to this now, or you're going to be subject to whatever is coming. So I think the issues are way out there, and people understand, along with the economy, the debt, the collapse of the financial system. That's something we've been big on here at CDM, is what is going to be the new financial system, because the one we have now is obviously not going to work. And that is actually the linchpin to the control mechanism for everyone. Because and Trump is on this, thank goodness, he said that he's going to let people self-custody Bitcoin, which is decentralized, which they can't control. So they're trying to set up their own central bank digital currencies. But if you're allowed to remove the financial control system from people so that they can transact on their own away from the federal government, then that collapses the whole banking system. So this is something we're going to be on, and a big, big issue. And I think Trump gets it.
You know, what's interesting to me, having been in the business for such a long time, you know, when people talk about the influx of immigrants, legal or illegal, but at a crisis mode, it's not unusual to see in past times that there has been, and I'm thinking back of during the Balkans, when the Balkans crisis erupted in the 1990s, there was a huge influx of migrants into Frankfurt, into Sweden, into other parts of Europe, and there was an increase of crime. So when we have this out of control influx of immigrations to the United States, and there's an increase in crime in the cities, and crimes in some of the rural areas, the social budgets are you know, blown out because they just don't have enough. There's languages, and it's true. When Donald Trump said this during his press conference, he talked about languages we've never heard of. I've heard that from our sources who have been at the border, that, you know, some of these people are coming down from the mountains of Guatemala and they end up, you know, in the United States. And this is a tribal language that people just, you know, it's not Spanish, it's not French, and it's a Mayan language. So my question, I guess, is why are these people doing what they're doing? Bill, do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, it's interesting. You've highlighted the fact that people are coming from all over. There's you know, been a number of reports of a lot of this coming essentially through something called the Darien Gap, which mm-hmm. is down in the sort of the connection, if you will, between South America and Central America. But more importantly, it's being used, if in fact that's a key point, it's being used by people from all over the world. They have actually, they've reported on camps that appear to be almost wholly Chinese based. Why would they be going all the way to the Darien Gap to come in? I don't know that we've identified the actual motivations behind all of this, but it seems to clearly be motivated, or might even say organized in a particular way, so that it's difficult to impossible for us to get a handle on and really understand what's going on. Let me expand on something that you just asked too, which is the motivating or the most concerning factor. I've heard both the president and a couple of his key people refer to what's going on now as people need to focus on common sense. Mm. And because the things that are concerning, most concerning in many regards, are the things that everybody can understand. And it is sort of the tactical issues that they face day in and day out. Regardless of socioeconomic status, what's happened with the cost of just living, taking care of your family, taking care of your kids, in many cases has doubled, sometimes tripled for different items, different things. And this is affecting everybody, and it affects them hourly, every day. Everything that they spend is now something different, something more expensive than it was 2-3 years ago. And what I'm hearing is all across the socioeconomic spectrum, everybody is feeling that. And I think that's why you're seeing Trump and his and his key people sort of targeting, not getting into the nitty-gritty of each different issue, but making people focus on what is common sense. That's what I think is so important, because everybody can recognize that. They feel it themselves every day.
Well, that brings us to the old statement that Ronald Reagan used to ask in the 1980s, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? So, mm-hmm. Kurt, you're in Nevada. That's an important state in terms of the Electoral College, and there's always a fight there. What are you hearing out there in terms of the Hispanic community?
Well, there seems to be a growing support for Trump and, you know, his policies out here, especially amongst minority communities, which to a lot of people is, you know, might surprise them, but it's what's happening, because, you know, these people want to, you know, a secure border and to feel safe in their, you know, where they live and everything else, just like anyone else. But apart from that, you also have, you know, the Hispanic community is, you know, very steeped in traditional family values and things, which, you know, they don't find any home in the Democratic Party for those things these days. I mean, completely gone away from that.
Todd, do you see a shift in Florida?
Florida is an interesting place. You have the DeSantis cartel, what we call it, who's essentially running the state, saying that they're MAGA and putting out a lot of conservative principles. But behind the scenes, they are enforcing an election fraud system where the machines are producing a lot of blank ballots, which cause a lot of nefarious activity, which we've reported on multiple times. And the voter rolls are extremely corrupt. The mail-in ballots are an issue, and they refuse to really do anything about that, to the point of passing legislation, Orwellianly called the Election Fraud or Election Integrity Act, when we called it the Election Fraud Legalization Act, where they stopped us from seeing data on certain reports from the machines because that's where the fraud was. So it's kind of humorous. In Florida, you know, I think there are pockets of people who, most of the people understand what's going on, but you've got a large immigrant population here who may not. And you've got a large Republican, in quotation marks, establishment apparatus, which is enforcing its will. So it's an extremely interesting state.
So that brings us to the whole issue about voting this year, because some people are saying that, you know, Trump's encouraging people to vote early, you know, to come out strong. And then we have the different rules in every state about, you know, which votes do you count first on election night? Well, the first votes have all traditionally been those who vote that same day, and then they get into the mail-in ballots later on. And the mail-in ballots didn't work in favor of the Republicans the last go around. With all of this, and I guess the only way to describe it is an incomplete investigation of election integrity coming out of 2020. How do you guys feel that we should be handling this? And Bill, you've been in the weeds of this in Georgia. So, I mean, jump in on this, and Todd, you too, because this is kind of serious now, because it's you know, if the conviction doesn't wake people up, then the next hurdle is going to be, how do you have a fair election?
Yeah. So there's several different layers to this too, and we're really sensitized to it here in Georgia. So even before we get to November 5th, we've got to get past the convention, which is coming up, in which we hope that he would be recognized and nominated by the Republican National Committee. However, we've already seen some funny things go on here in Georgia, and in fact in other states, regarding the delegates who would be at that convention and who would ultimately cast their votes for hopefully their pledged nominee from their states. In many cases, that would be Trump, and that would, with a single vote, probably nominate him. But we've never had a case where a presumptive nominee has now been convicted, albeit perhaps inappropriately, more than perhaps, inappropriately of crimes which seem to have been created out of thin air so that they could convict him of something. And so now, having had that ruling in a court, where does that leave us in terms of what the Republican National Committee or the people within there that make their rules, what doors might that open? And are, in fact, those people looking for such doors to be available? We don't know. But the very fact that you could have here in Georgia a former lobbyist for Dominion Voting Systems be named by the nominating committee, seated by the GOP here in Georgia, how in the heck could a gentleman that was a former Dominion lobbyist be named on that list of delegates by that nominating committee? And we ended up having at the convention to nominate an alternative and take him off. But
Bill, there's more behind that. What about they were switching the lists out, right? Can you go into that a little?
Well, that's correct. I didn't want to confuse this with the dynamic. But yes, they were, in fact, portraying the list that the nominating committee presented as, oh, this is the Trump slate. Well, then after investigating further, we found out that there were several text messages received by delegates that had a list of candidates on it. You could argue that even some of those candidates weren't correct. But notably, none of those lists that were sent out by text to the convention attendees had the name of John Garst, this Dominion lobbyist, on those lists. Where in the heck were they coming from? And how did that name end up on the nominating committee's approved list at the convention? All of this is really, I think, just symptoms. There's symptoms of there's another set of processes being followed, some that we don't see. And that would imply that if they're here, then we should anticipate that these same kinds of things might play out at the Republican National Convention. So to your question, we got to get past that first. He's got to be the nominee. Once then we get to the next stage, then we can start debating what the different factors of fairness might be in the actual election come November 5th.
All right, so I'm going to pause because I think we're going to take a commercial break now and come out on the other side, and let's talk about the rock and roll of everything that's going to be happening in the month of June, because it's June 2nd, but starting this week, it's going to be pretty crazy.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
It's going to be a good day.
This Monday, we do have a little bit left available here. Check us out, familyfarmbeefbox.com. Thanks. Have a good day.
All right. So before we get to the calendar for the month of June, I want to remind everybody that we started the show 2 years ago specifically because of the Biden administration's roller coaster into changing the international health regulations at the WHO and putting our health sovereignty underneath the WHO. And they have had a meetings in the last several days where it doesn't look like it's going to happen right now. It's on hold. But there's a real line in the sand between what Donald Trump wants to do and what Biden wants to do. Trump pulled out of the WHO. Trump now has come out and said he's not for mandated masks or mandated vaccinations. Biden is for all of those things and giving up our medical sovereignty to an organization of unelected officials who can decide what's going to happen in Illinois or Massachusetts. And I'm specifically mentioning those two states today because I know that we've got some people, you know, leaning in here from Massachusetts and Illinois watching the show. How do we get this issue onto the minds of American people that if they vote for the Biden administration again, in fact, they're going to have, if they didn't like the last go around with COVID, they're not going to like what's coming up in the future. So Kurt, weigh in here because, I mean, this is something you and I have talked about, and it's Todd and Bill and everybody. We've all discussed this behind the scenes. But how do we get people to understand if you vote for Biden, you're basically voting to put Tedros, who's the Secretary General of the WHO, overseeing your medical autonomy? I mean, you have no medical autonomy. He's going to be making the decisions.
Well, I think it's critical that we create awareness around this issue because I think the problem here is that most Americans, it's inconceivable to them that, you know, a foreign body would come in and tell them, you know, how to manage their health care. So they can't even conceptualize it. And since, you know, the administration certainly is not trying to publicize, you know, this too much, you know, what their intended plans are. You see it much more in Europe where you have countries that are, where there's very active campaigns against what the WHO is doing because the public awareness there is much greater. And, you know, they living under the oppression of the EU itself, they understand that, you know, an outside body can come to their country and tell them what to do. I just think Americans.
Right, right. And that was what Brexit was all about. It got to be too much for the British to take what Brussels told them that they had to do, whether it be immigration or economic reasons. They pushed back on it. What is it that we miss in the United States? Do you think, Kurt, it's a lack of experience? I mean, like the Europeans have gone through with Brussels?
Well, I do. I think it's just that Americans cannot conceive of this as something real. So when you tell them this, it's very hard to convince them that this is something real that's going to happen to them. But I think just raising awareness is what we need to do. I mean, COVID was a start. It sort of gave people an idea of, you know, how oppressive, you know, a government could be in this regard. But still, they saw that experience as being, you know, put in by their local politicians, you know, who were creating these rules in different states. They don't have the idea that an international body, unelected bureaucrats could come in and tell them, you know, how, you know, whether they should take a shot, for example, or, or anything else. It's just inconceivable for Americans. So it's a hard task, I think, to do this, but it's an essential one that, you know, we work to raise awareness in every way that we can that this is something very real and a very real threat to, you know, individual autonomy, freedom, and your basic health care, because you would have no idea what they're injecting into you.
Well, you know, I'm always astonished. I mean, I think I was in shock in 2020 because I couldn't believe Americans lined up and didn't push back. I was absolutely stunned by that. And I was stunned that they would keep the liquor stores open, but close down the churches, close down the small businesses, and a lot of them went out of business. I mean, I find it hard to believe that anybody in America would be not standing up against the Biden administration, who has proven that they want to do even more in the future in terms of control. So how do we get these people? I mean, Todd, you talk to a lot of business leaders. How do we get them to the average American to say, no, we're not going to go through this again?
Well, sometimes, you know, you've seen the meme of the guy holding the girl and he's got her eyelids pulled open. Like, you got to look, you know, that's kind of the way I feel. Like, these people, you have to, and maybe it's just people dropping dead around them. I don't know. But I think Bill had some interesting information on the WHO. Bill, you want to give that connection?
Sure. So two observations to get us started. One is I'm hopeful, and I'm using a particular data point to state this. I'm hopeful that people are in a better position today than they were when COVID first came out. One, I think their source of information is broader. And I'll use CDM and our work as one of those data points. They see what we're bringing out and others that are like us, I would say. And they have a different viewpoint than they would from mainstream media. So one, they have a different set of inputs. Two, if you look at their reaction in the last, I'll call it year or year and a half, when they brought out boosters and they've tried to make people get scared with, you know, monkeypox and Delta and Omicron. And, you know, people starting small but then growing have said, you know what? I don't know. This is beginning to smell a little bovine-ish to me, and I need to take a better look. And so I think the number that I've heard most recently is, you know, we're at one point back in 2020 and 2021, you might see 75% or 70% of people going and getting a shot of one kind or another. Now it's down, I believe, into single digits as a percentage. And I'm hoping that that's in fact true. So those pieces are helpful. And then two, there's an interesting post that Donald Trump Jr. brought out, I want to say about 3.5 months ago. And he said, you know, conspiracy theorists are simply people with good pattern recognition. And I think some of the things that we're beginning to see even this week, even in the last couple of weeks, are triggering that pattern recognition in people. They're beginning to see things that they saw back as COVID emerged, and they're seeing similarities, and they're immediately having a pullback response, I hope, that says, wait a minute, haven't I seen this before? Didn't I see something called Event 201 just before COVID hit? What am I seeing now with the WHO, with CDC, with some of the other organizations that track epidemics, all coming out going, oh my gosh, big danger from, in this case, bird flu, avian flu. And they're all pushing on it going, oh, well, this is coming. Well, how would they know? And two, why are they in such sync? And three, isn't it interesting that we're heading into an election year? Mm-hmm. Pattern recognition time, perhaps.
Well, that brings us to the inevitable and notoriously infamous Tony Fauci is going to be testifying on June 3rd before Congress. And what's for people who have missed this, Peter Daszak testified beginning of May. David Morans, who was the chief scientist working with Fauci in 2020 and for years, and a very good friend of Peter Daszak from Eco Alliance, also was brought to bear to testify in the last 10 days. And now it's Fauci's turn. And Fauci's going to be put on the block because now Congress has discovered and obtained emails, basically nefarious emails, I think it's fair to say, of trying to cover up and lead people to you know, not focus on the gain of function. Gain of function, folks, is Frankenstein science. And we have reported on this since 2021. I've been speaking to some of these people, like Dennis Carroll, who has appeared on the show several times. We've done a repeat of him because the interview's so extraordinary. These are people who go out to the caves to collect the bats, bring them to the lab, humanize the mice, turn it into coronavirus, to test it to see if it's transmissible, because at the end of the day, the Biden's Office of Technology at the White House, Science and Technology, in September of 2021, absolutely put into writing that their intention is to have a mandated seasonal coronavirus. And in order to create that model, to have mandated seasonal coronaviruses for all the coronaviruses in the world that they discover and turn into transmissibility to human beings, they're going to make money. And in order to do that, they have to have this gain of function financed. So this is very important this week for people to tune in to when Tony Fauci testifies, because I think he's going to be more challenged now than ever before. And I think it's, you know, the time is coming for this to happen. The other thing that's going to happen this month is we have Hunter Biden's first trial, also the same day, June 3rd. It's going to be in Delaware. This has to do with the guns. Do you guys think that the Hunter Biden trial is going to shift anything? Todd, you want to take that?
You know, this is a much bigger issue than people realize. The Biden crime family needs to be exposed, and they need to stop labeling and arresting anyone they don't like because they're saying what actually happened, calling them Russian agents, whatever. I mean, truth is truth, and this is important, and people need to understand that, you know, there's the globalist infrastructure, but there's the Biden syndicate that is running this whole thing, and, you know, they're not necessarily distinct, but they're not necessarily working together in all ways. Biden has their own agenda that may be different than Obama has, I think. So I think it's really important to shine a light on the Biden's activities globally, and I hope that is done.
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting because when I heard, I've been following that case because they've appealed it when the Hunter Biden Epstein plea deal, June of last year, was not accepted by the judge. And then as a result of that, the two cases, the gun and the tax, were bifurcated. The gun trial is in Delaware. The tax trial is in California. And several times they have tried, Abby Lowell, who was Hunter Biden's attorney, has filed motions and tried to get these cases dismissed in both California and in Delaware, and that has not been successful. And then they've appealed those decisions, and that hasn't been successful. But recently, they made the announcement that the judge in Delaware, of all places, was going to allow the laptop to be introduced as evidence. And I think that that's extraordinary. One, it has to do with the guns. I thought it might be California where they'd introduce it because of the taxes. But I mean, the impact of that, because remember, in 2020, we were all told this was a Russian disinformation. This wasn't Hunter Biden's laptop. Now it becomes a piece of evidence into the trial. Bill, will it resonate, Bill and Kurt, in Georgia or in Nevada with anybody?
I think it'll be fascinating. Some people have been able to find out certain things that were on the laptop, but I think given the fact that they were prevented, most Americans were prevented from even believing it was real, they'll say, yeah, I want to find out what the heck this is. And it will remind them, hey, wait a minute. Everybody was saying this wasn't even real. It was some sort of contraption by the Russians to try to plant information. Well, it wasn't. And it's another example of, you know, they look back. People will look back, I think, and say, I do want to see what's on it. I've already seen some. A lot of it's super concerning. It seems to be stuff, you know, I wouldn't believe people should do. And yet there it is.
And it's interesting because when that letter came out and when the story broke in the New York Post in, I think it was October 14th, 2020, the story broke. And then the letter came out of 51, you know, intelligence, retired or current intelligence officers led by Clapper, Brennan, who are not trustworthy. They shouldn't be on any network. They shouldn't have a contract with anybody. Morrell was there. But we later learned that it was Tony Blinken who asked Morrell, who's, number two at the CIA years ago, to, in fact, get some support so the letter was created, 51 intelligence guys came out, and that was the intention was for Biden, if this laptop story came up at the debate, Biden would have a piece of evidence to push back on it and say, no, this is Russian disinformation, when in fact it was all contrived.
Yeah.
It's dirty politics. I mean, it's a cover up.
Well, that's true. It's not just dirty politics. It's an indication of something that we're going to need to come to grips with, I think. There's an interesting conversation in the last couple of days between Tucker and Don Jr. And as part of that, Don said, you know, I grew up, as most of us did, thinking, you know, we're the good guys. Our people, our agencies are there to help us, watch out for us, protect us, and, you know, make sure that bad things don't happen elsewhere in the world that we can help prevent. And we're learning a harsh lesson that I think you referred to it as, that's all BS. The people that we thought we could trust, for one reason or another, in some cases just, you know, contrived by their or compromised by their own leadership, have been doing things that are not truthful, not in keeping with the best interest of the American public, and doing it for reasons of their own that I think we'll end up finding out about. But those 51 are a fascinating example. How would you do that with people that are in a position to know whether this was real or not, and they all come out and say, no, it's not?
Well, not only that, they're the same people who were involved with Benghazi, with Arab Rising, with the USAID, training civil dissidents overseas how to use technology prior to Arab Rising to overthrow despots like Gaddafi in Libya and Mubarak in Egypt. We all, you know, Hillary even wrote about this in her book. Okay, very opaquely, but we know this to be true of what they did to the Obama administration, and mm-hmm. Panetta was involved with that. But it almost seems as if the Obama tactics are now being used on the United States in the last 4 years.
Kurt, and they seem to be coming from here. Yep.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we've really become a globalist state is what it is. I mean, it's not a state that responds to the interests of the American people. It's responding to globalist interests, which are unelected interests to begin with. So that's really where this is all coming from. They're not, these agencies have been corrupted, you know, to serve those interests. And we're seeing that across the globe. And basically, you know, with U.S. foreign policy, we've taken it where, you know, we're acting basically as, you know, the world's arbiter. I mean, we're the ones imposing the rules everywhere, and that's creating, you know, a great deal of resentment. But certainly those rules have nothing to do with the interests of the American people. They have to do with the interests of the globalist elites that are behind this, you know, such as, you know, the military industrial complex, you know, Big Pharma. There's just a long list of these. And that also ties into the, you know, the immigration policies that they're pushing worldwide. This is not just a U.S. problem, this immigration. It's a worldwide problem. And I think one of the key things, you know, you're talking about things that are coming up this month on the calendar. Well, one big important thing is next Sunday with the European parliamentary elections.
Absolutely.
Because that could be a bellwether as to, you know, what's happening just in the way Brexit was in 2016. You're seeing a lot of frustration across Europe with these, you know, globalist policies, with the EU. You know, certainly Ursula von der Leyen, her leadership has been, you know, very
questionable at best, concerning her texts with, you know, the CEO of Pfizer.
Well, destructive, I would say, in general. I mean, you have to take into consideration, you're talking about, you know, the immigration policies and why they're pushing these things. Well, in Europe, I think it's much clearer why they're pushing these things. They want to destroy the national fabric of these countries. And it's much easier for them to do that there than it is here, even, because you're dealing with, look at a country like Bulgaria, for example, or Hungary. I mean, you're talking about a population of 7 million in Bulgaria, about 10 million in Hungary. If you introduce all of a sudden a million immigrants who, you know, come from a completely different culture and background, you know, you're really destroying that whole, you know, that whole national fabric. I mean, the language, the culture, religion, everything is going out the window, and you're going to lose that national heritage. And you're starting to see people in Europe rise up against this. Although, you know, some are paying the price, like, you know, Fico in Slovakia. I mean, he was, you know, basically they attempted to assassinate him, and that is, you know, was by the left, obviously, and we haven't, you know, gotten to the bottom of who was really behind it. But you never, when you know immediately when they come out within less than 24 hours and say, oh, it's just a lone crazy man acting on his own, you know that that's not true. So, you know, that kind of tells the story.
You know, when you say the word assassination, my blood boils, because I think the Biden administration, and this, no matter what people know about Secret Service, it comes down to the president of the United States can easily waive any rules, any history, any precedents, and give somebody like Bobby Kennedy Secret Service. And the fact that this is the fifth time last week that Bobby Kennedy has been denied Secret Service. And they're going to do everything to keep Bobby off the stage at CNN and ABC later in September. But CNN's debate is, what is it, January 27th to 26th, guys? I keep on forgetting.
June 20th.
Is it the 26th or the 27th?
I'm not sure the exact.
But it, nevertheless, okay, it's this month. So what are your thoughts about this debate that's coming up? Because I think it's pivotal. It's going to be presumably after Hunter Biden's trial is finished, and there'll be a conviction or maybe not. It's after Donald Trump's. I mean, Todd, first of all, do you think it's going to happen?
I really don't have an opinion on that, but I do have an opinion on, I heard McCarthy yesterday recently say that everyone needs to trust the results. And I find that meaning.
Trust the results of what?
Of the election.
In
November. So that to me tells me that they have it in the bag. This is playing out very similar to Brazil. There was massive, protests, hundreds of thousands of people, and it didn't matter. They just stole the vote. So I think the issue in the U.S. is we have to have enough people who obviously know this was stolen and obviously aren't going to accept it, and make it so that, if 80% of the country says they're behind Trump, then how in the heck can you, without fear of a rebellion, steal the election? So yeah. I think that's the phase we're in now, is that we have to make it very painful for them to do that. And I like what, other people have said. Why don't you just back off? This is a long game. Back off here. Let Trump in office, try to control him then, but don't start a civil war, which we're all scared of, or maybe that's what they want.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up in a civil war. I think what people need to do is get out and vote overwhelmingly and make this be the highest participatory group of people voting ever in the United States. Because, remember back in 1992, when Bill Clinton got elected, it was less than 43% of the Americans who actually went to the polls.
Yeah. But if I could make one comment back on before we move on about the assassination thing, one of the very interesting reactions following Trump's verdict was representative from Mississippi, Bernie Thompson, putting mm-hmm. forth a proposal to actually pull Secret Service protection from Trump.
Right.
Which is, I think a lot of people are very quickly pivoting to say that's essentially a death threat. If you're going to put him in prison, and the latest talk that I'm hearing here is that they might propose that he, if they do that, if they attempt to do that, it'd be Rikers Island, not like a minimum security prison, but one of the probably worst places around. That's essentially a death threat in my mind. I mean, that is tantamount to saying we're going to put him in the same position that as Epstein was. Look what happened there. And they're going to do it from Congress? Seriously?
I don't see them putting him in jail. I see this judge, if you believe everything about the daughter making money off of the trial, and I see him putting under him home arrest so he can't campaign.
It could be if
they decide. I'm just hoping. First of all, they're going to appeal that, and I don't know. And I think this goes according to state law. The gag order usually is up until the time of somebody's sentencing. So if they're going to appeal, and I don't know if that gag order is then lifted or it stays in there until the appeal is played out.
Well, so many things about this trial have been other than as usual, right? Normally a unanimous decision by a jury is all 12. Well, in this case, no, you can have one group here and one group here and another group over here, but we'll call that unanimous. I mean, there's been so many things that have been done other than traditional, and some would say appropriate court proceedings, that it's difficult to foresee what they might try.
I've spoken to a lot of lawyers this week when the conviction came down. And everybody has used pretty much the same terminology, that there's a floodgate, there's a tsunami, there's a long list of arguments to have this overturned. And especially in light of the fact that it's a novel legal theory, an argument that they put forth attaching a state crime to a federal crime. And then, and most importantly, tying it to federal election law, when in fact, Trump's expert witness on federal election law was not allowed to testify. I mean, that's sort of like what you're denying the defense.
Yeah.
But that's what the judge did.
There's one additional outstanding just thing that I did not learn until recently, and that is that apparently they changed New York law for 1 year to facilitate the case. And in a year, it goes back to the way it was previously.
That was the Eugene Carroll case.
Pardon me?
Bill, that was the Eugene Carroll thing. That's really
okay. But just the fact that they would do that. Why would you change law for a given case and then let it go back to the way it was? It's clearly
because
opening the door kind of concept, right?
No, it wasn't specifically for the it was pertained to the Carroll case, but that was done for anybody, and it was as a result. Truly, it goes back to the Catholic Church in New York and allowing victims to come forward. So it wasn't specifically done for Trump. They did it. And they've done this in other states, Bill. A lot of this goes back to the Boy Scouts. It goes back to the Catholic Church, because in many of the state assemblies had in the past, the Catholic Church paid the lobbyists. So they had very small windows for statute of limitations for reporting. So that was the original reason of that in the last 20 years. So I don't think it's geared towards Trump itself. I think it was Carroll who was taking advantage of what they had decided already because of the child sex abuse cases that were up there. And they allowed that. Now, keep in mind, too, there's another distinction here. And this is a ruling that just came out with Harvey Weinstein's case. OK, Harvey's has been overturned. He's still in jail because he's got other cases and convictions. But one of the things that happened in his legal history is that they allowed salacious, overly, you know, too many numbers of that. That's another argument the lawyers are telling me that they, in fact, can use to on appeal for Trump, because there was no reason to have all the salacious information that was coming out at the time. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Christine, I think Bill has some WHO stuff related to Georgia. You want to go through that real quick, Bill?
Well, it's beyond just Georgia, but I will. You had asked earlier what the pushback was. Let me, if I can, I'm going to share something.
Oh, you got about 3 minutes.
So. Okay. So there is an effort to send the message through legislative officials that we don't want this thing. You know, we've had cases where they tried to bake in some WHO standards into Georgia law. Those got some of the biggest pushbacks we've seen. Here's another one where folks are signing and asking elected officials to sign up to push back on the WHO from enacting this agreement that's under consideration. When you start looking through it, it's got some pretty darn onerous stuff. And it isn't just Georgia, but Georgians, because we've become so sensitized to a junk in the law, and we have a track record of seeing a couple laws proposed that had WHO ascending to defining certain characteristics in mental health criteria and so forth. People are used to pushing back on this stuff here in Georgia. That's a big deal right now. So I'm hoping that will spread. I'm hoping that people will pick it up and understand what we're looking at. They're proposing all kinds of stuff. If you go read the agreement that they're purporting, it would essentially set aside patent rights and some other cases were asked that they be set aside, such that data and patents and other things could be shared across countries. In some cases, you might argue for that. But when you start talking about data is people. Data can be their DNA. It can be their reactions. It can be their identities. It can be all kinds of stuff. Why would we be sharing that, you know, carte blanche, if you would, as part of some of these agreements? Seems very, very concerning.
It is concerning, and they did that during COVID. Some of the data that was collected during COVID was actually sent to China. So it's a concern everybody should have. Anybody have any last thoughts before we sign off here?
Kurt, go ahead.
I would just say, you know, keep an eye on next weekend. It's going to be a huge indicator of where things are headed, both in Europe and internationally, and with impact for the United States. So definitely pay attention.
I would ask people to please follow CDM.press, sign up for our newsletters, sign up for our no-ad subscriptions. We need your support. We're under the attack left and right all day long, every night. Last night was another one. So we need your support, and big part of that is financially, and also spread the word. Our no-ad subscriptions give you $10 a month access to all of our content all over the world for no ads, and that's a big deal. I know that people hate pop-up ads on their phone.
Yep. My own feedback for our listeners is, if you think something doesn't fit, go research it. Don't take it as a fact until you've checked it yourself. Make sure you know.
So on that note, folks, stay tuned for next Sunday. And thank you for watching. And thank you all to our senior editorial journalist. See you guys later.
Bye.
Thank you.